Okay, so let's talk about the path integral. And one initial motivation I'm going to throw out is that when it comes not to just solving problems, but actually making sense of quantum theory, interpretational questions, there are not very many people looking to the path integral for answers. And so just as one motivation, if you're a new researcher or wanting to find some field where there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, there's one reason to just look at this different way of doing quantum mechanics and saying, oh, maybe this will give me a different perspective on it. But for this particular conference, I'll throw out a few more motivations. And I think it should be obvious that if you're thinking about space-time, path integrals are the way to go. For one thing is we don't need space-like foliations, right? If you're just looking at the action, just looking at Lagrangian densities, you can just look at the whole history. You don't have to carve it into states in any particular way if you don't want to. I'll also make the point that there are far more evident time symmetries. Maybe just looking at these pictures, you can tell that, oh, there's obviously more symmetries in this path integral type picture than you're going to see in a conventional canonical picture. And those of you who are interested in curved space-time, of course, you're drawn to the classical action because it's well-defined in curved space-time. And that's one more motivation for thinking about the path integral. Okay, now, why don't people think about the path integral? Well, I think the most common thing you'll hear is that, well, it's just equivalent to canonical quantum mechanics, so there's no point thinking about it. It's all equal. And I'm going to really push back against that as much as I possibly can. Another issue is just people don't know how to do it. People like, well, I have an entanglement problem. How do I do that with a path integral? And we have some new tools now to actually do that. So I will describe those new tools as well. But I think really what it often comes down to is that people just like time evolution. So referencing Emily's excellent talk from yesterday, people like the idea of the universe as a computer sort of solving itself and don't just intuitively like and all at once, you know, block universe analysis that the path integral pushes you to. And I would actually argue that's the main reason people don't like to think about it. It's just, they don't like it. But if that's our human biases getting in the way, let's try to set those aside. So basically my quick outline here is I'm gonna try to distinguish the propagator from the path integral, which maybe you think is the same thing, but I will try to clarify what I mean by the difference. And that difference is exactly the difference between dynamics and this all at once viewpoint. And then I'll tell you about this new toolbox we have. If you ever want to do a path integral account of an entanglement experiment, there's now a way to do that. And maybe I'll even get to a quick application of this new toolbox for entanglement swapping. Okay, what's the propagator? So unitary dynamics says that we can go from an initial state to some calculated future state. Notice here I'm calling this x-axis xi at some initial time, and I'm calling this axis xf at some final time. Now in flat space time, this is the same x. I'm just putting the subscripts on here so we can more easily tell them apart in the equations when I'm doing this. But if you're in curved space time, of course you want a different XF than an XI. And so I'll just throw that out there. So here's the propagator. The propagator is basically saying, I want to evolve my initial state psi I to my final, my calculated state, psi calc, I call it. And so you use this sum over all paths as a Green's function and you propagate it to the final state. And this is what's provably equivalent to unitary dynamics. And so when people say, oh, the path is the path integral, it's just the same as unitary dynamics. This is what they're thinking of. But that's not something you can predict. What you predict is actually what's the probability you measure the eigenstate. And you don't see what you calculate, right? You see your measured eigenstate. I'm going to call this psi f. And so then of course you're like, oh, well, of course you have to use the Born rule. You can't just do dynamics. You have to then take this calculated state and put it into the Born rule to get out your probability, transition probability. Or I'm gonna think of these as joint probabilities. Now you probably think of these as two different things, dynamics, collapse measurement, integral problem. People like to think about one and not the other. But why do we have to do that? The path integral says we can just take this result and plug it in here. And that's what I call the path integral. And so what do you get? We just take this integral, plug it into the other integral. You get this wonderfully beautiful symmetric equation that I call the path integral. This is, you, on the left, you can define this operationally, right? You define your preparation procedure and your measurement procedure, and you can define this operationally. On the right, you have this wonderful symmetry between I's and F's, right? The only break between the past and the future here is the fact that you conjugate this, your final psi F wave function. But really this, once you see this, you can't really unsee it. This is the entire empirically testable content of single particle quantum mechanics is this equation. Everything else is baggage that we put on top of it. And the baggage that we put on top of it tends to be, we have to do these integrals in a particular order, which is, I think, a little crazy. I'm not going to talk about conditional probabilities, but of course you could fix on one of these and make a conditional probability, which is how we normally think about these things. But here's the thing. Suppose I want to now recover ordinary dynamics from this beautiful symmetric equation. The only way to do that is to undo that mathematical step I just did. In other words, to do the xi integral first and say, oh, that's the dynamics, and then do the xf integral second and say, that's the collapse. But why do that? I mean, that breaks the symmetry. So if you don't do that, if you just say, oh, I have this nice symmetric equation, what's happened to psi calc? It's gone. It is not here. It is, the only way to get it out is to put in your biased baggage of how you calculate this. If you don't put in that biased baggage, psi calc is gone. There is no calculated wave function. And it's not just a matter of symmetry. It's actually a matter of practicality. Why should I integrate to paths that have no final support on this wave function, psi f? If you do it in two steps, dynamics and then measurement, you integrate to all these places in the universe that have no support for your final measurement, and then you collapse. Why do we have to do that? If you just look at this expression, you just need to integrate to your final wave function. And so none of your paths look sudden, look like a sudden collapse at all. Okay, so what all does this mean? Well, let's take a little stock here. First of all, if psi calc has disappeared, it's not part of the path integral, it's not part of reality, then presumably it's just a state of knowledge. It's one of these, it's a psi epistemic conclusion. Of course, I have to cite the sort of standard arguments for why you should think about the wave function as epistemic from Rob Speckens here. And he showed you can get all of this really fantastic breadth of quantum theory from just thinking about quantum states as epistemic. You can't get everything, but you can get the rest of it, as you can see in this other paper, and Nathan's going to talk about this in just an hour or so. So stay tuned for that talk, that you can get the rest of it by imposing final constraints on your wave function. You can get all the parts you couldn't get from the Speckens toy theory. Okay. So I'm telling you, you shouldn't look at dynamics and collapse as a realistic account of what's going on. Can you just look to the path integral for a realistic account of what's going on? Well, no one's quite been able to do that either, but there are some really good clues that if you just study the path integral, don't try to break into dynamics and collapse, that there is actually, I think, a pretty clear story of what your final ontology is going to have to look like. I'm not going to get into that. There's the citation for that. What I want to talk about in the last bit of time here is entanglement. So all that stuff I did was just single particle quantum mechanics, right? What about entanglement? So there's this kind of criminally undercited paper by Senhun and Sorkin here in 91 that show how you can do this. So this should be known, even though most people don't know this paper. You can do a Bell experiment, basically, with a path integral account, and they showed how to do this. So we sort of riffed on this and had some fun with it in this paper from 10 years ago with David Miller and Hugh Price, but we got some new results. So here are the new results. It doesn't just work for special states and special measurements. You can actually turn any two-qubit entanglement experiment, or more actually, into a path integral friendly account. So this is work with a student, my student at San Jose State, Narayani Tyagi. And we have this scheme. So we have a generic two-qubit state. You just rotate the coordinates so you get into the Schmidt basis. And then you only have a few free parameters you need to implement into your path integral. The way we do it is basically the same way Senho and Sorkin did. We have a two-photon source. So here's my picture of my source in the middle here. It's a two-photon source. It's constrained that it emits photons in opposite directions. So if you put a screen around this source, you would discover either you get photons on the A lines, the solid lines, or on the B lines. The new twist that we did is we said, well, what if those probabilities aren't the same? What if you put a screen around it, the probabilities of finding your photons on the A paths is A squared, and the probabilities of putting your photons on the B path is B squared. So it's not symmetric. Also, we can put in this phase plate delta, that's exactly going to correspond to this delta in your Schmidt basis. So this is your preparation. Then you send off the photons here to Alice, and Alice does a measurement. She can choose to measure anywhere on the block sphere she wants. So this this phi here is phi on her block sphere. She changes the phase plate with that angle. This theta is theta on her block sphere, and she chooses a beam splitter with that particular reflectivity. And basically she can project just, I mean, you get the same results. You can project onto the two outcomes that she can measure. And then similarly, Bob here has his local controls of what, where he wants to measure his particle on his block sphere. And so once you have this geometry, the path integral is trivial. Then you just, it's actually really easy. It's arguably easier than ordinary quantum mechanics. This is how you do it. Say, I want to know the probability that the joint probability that Alice measures plus and Bob measures plus for their chosen bases. So you say, well, what are the possible histories? Here's one possible history, these blue lines, and you work through, well, what's the amplitude of that history? And, you know, if we go through a phase plate, you have E to the I phi. If you go off a beam splitter, there's a simple rule for that. You get an A out in front because of the source puts you an A on front. But that's not the only possibility, right? What if the photons come out this way? So the photons now emerge on these paths. One of them goes to Alice, one goes to Bob. Again, they show up on the plus detectors. And then what do you do with these amplitudes? You add them and square them. That's, you know, that's the path integral prescription. And what do you get? You get exactly the conventional quantum mechanical calculations for any possible two-qubit initial state, for any possible basis you choose to measure it. The paper shows you always get exactly what you would calculate in quantum mechanics. They violate Bell inequalities. They do everything exactly as ordinary quantum mechanics. And it's not just two-qubit states. The same paper shows how to do GHZ state, and it should be generalizable to pretty much anything. Okay, well, what does this mean? Well, first of all, I want to point out that these histories are not weird histories. They are just two photon histories. They live on space-time. If you plotted it on the space-time diagram, it would be just a nice V. They're on light-like trajectories. There's no configuration space here, right? This is all done in space and time. All of these histories are in space and time. There's no weird link between Alice's and Bob's wings of the experiment. The only link is the actual photons being sent from the source arriving. Where does the magic come in? The magic comes in because it's not a state, it's not analyzing states one at a time, it's analyzing the whole history. And sure enough, when Alice causes her setting to be whatever she chooses, it's interventionist causation, right? She changes her beam splitter and her phase plate. She's influencing the entire amplitude of the whole history. And so that's where the magic comes in. The magic is coming in through this all at once calculation of it's not one state at a time, it's the whole history. Also notice, it's not just the dynamics that changes, the collapse has changed too. There's not like light coming out of both parts of the beam splitter and collapsing into one. It's you only look at the histories where all of the paths end up where the measurement happens. You change the measurement picture and the preparation picture and the dynamics, everything looks different. The wonderful thing about path integrals, of course, is that it doesn't matter how you slice it. It doesn't matter the reference frame. You get the exact same account from the path integral, regardless of, say, who measures first. It's the same math. you don't have like, oh, in one case, Alice is sending a faster than light message to Bob. And in the other case, Bob is sending a faster than light message to Alice. And there's none of that. It's just it's the same account in everything. So this is something we used in this 10-year-old paper. Hugh cleverly named this FISH, the Feynman integral symmetry hypothesis. Just the idea that if you have two path integral accounts of that look that are very, very similar under a symmetry, they probably mean the same thing. And so we can apply that very quickly. Do I have a few minutes
to do
entanglement swapping? So here's something I've been thinking about, both because I just wrote a fun little paper on it with Hugh Price, and Emily Adlam suggested I use this to check out entanglement swapping. So what's entanglement swapping? That's when we hear this top picture, you have two entangled particles. One of each is sent to a joint measurement here. And for certain joint measurements, standard quantum mechanics tells you that that entangles these two particles, and you get all the usual Bell correlations between the particles at A and B. You can then say, well, what if you do your joint measurement at a space-like separation, like the famous Delft-Hansen experiment that we talk about in this paper, where it's not clear what the temporal order is, or even clearer to most people, I think in most people's mind, you can do delayed choice entanglement swapping where you don't actually make that measurement till later. And now I bet you most of you are thinking, oh, this is an entanglement swapping. There's no entanglement between A and B. You haven't entangled them until after Alice and Bob do their measurements. This is just post-selection. So this is stuff Hugh and I talk about in this paper. But if it's just post-selection, then this has a very different account than this initial problem, right? You say this really is entanglement swapping and this isn't. Well, what does the path integral have to say about it? We can take this formalism I just described. You have to add one new piece, which is how do you implement a two photon measurement? That is not in the paper. I'm working on this with a different student, Rayler. We've figured it out and you can email me for details. We're gonna start writing it up soon, but we have an arbitrary two qubit measurement in this formalism. And guess what? The path integral framework says these are identical. Basically, the story in one is the story in the other. It's not logically coherent to say, oh, there really is entanglement in this picture, but there's not really entanglement in this picture if you look to the path integral. The path integral basically says you got to treat them the same. If this is entanglement, so is this. And if this is post-selection, then so is this, only it's a weird kind of post-selection. Obviously. So what I want you to remember, first of all, it's always good to look at alternate viewpoints. The path integral is certainly an alternate viewpoint. Any entanglement experiment you want to look at, take a look at this paper and you can see how to translate it into a path integral account. And I guess my main thing is quantum mechanics is this tightly constructed puzzle box, right? And so I'm interested in time. I'm gonna pull out the dynamics piece and play with it. But if you don't pull out all the other pieces, if you don't pull out the measurement and the preparation and the whole structure of quantum mechanics, it's never gonna fit back together into any coherent whole. You've got to think about everything together. And so if the measurement matters, if just because we don't know about what the future measurement settings are, we don't know about the future measurement results, that's not evidence that they don't matter. That's just evidence that we don't know about. So maybe that's my final point. There's lots of fun stuff here in the field of all at once quantum foundations. And let's take some questions.
Thank you for the talk. We have time for one very quick question. And in the interest of time, I would ask everybody else to take their question to the Hangout session afterwards. The first hand raised I saw was by Kaustubh Singhi. Hello.
Yeah, thanks for the talk. I just want to know, want you to quickly clarify what you mean by there is no QM configuration space in an earlier slide you said.
So normally in a two particle qubit, you double your space time into, now you're living in a x1, x2 wave function. And if you have three particles, you got x1, x2, x3. So your space, you lose space normally when you go to multi-particles. You get into this big configuration space. But you don't need to do that in the path integral framework. Every history lives in ordinary space and time. You don't have these giant configuration spaces that you normally have in state-based quantum mechanics.